today will be getting a briefing from the regulator, which I hope one of these days we'll call it a fully-fledged regulator, because you're still, you're still half falling being regulated. You're still regulating piped gas. You're still regulating pipe fuel. Mamukuzwa, I would like to hear one day, honourable members, kusitua the energy regulator regulates fuel, not pipe fuel. I don't know what pipe fuel is. All I know is fuel. You see. But in any case, without wasting any time, this is just as a reminder. It's part of the budget review process, stage number 6. We already started spending sleepless nights because the report from the committee side is going to be concluded by Friday. And we're getting our last input from Sanity and the Fiscal and Financial Commission on Thursday. So we're going to burn the candles on both sides on Thursday night so that we can submit the report. Why there's such a tight period, I don't know. I hope in future some rearrangement and restructuring will be done, because the risk is that we're being pushed to comply more than to do quality work. That's the risk that we're skidding into. Apologies are as follows. Honorable Smale, he's got prior commitments in his constituency in Polokwane. Matindo is still on sick leave, and Mafagasin is attending Water and Environmental Affairs. I suppose they are doing some legislation there. Both ministers are in Tswane. The visit by President Hollande from France is keeping them more than busy. And also the other apologies from the chairperson of the audit committee, but there's a representative from the audit committee which I hope will be introduced. And having said that, let me hand over to NERSA then.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the opportunity again to present our annual report. Before I do anything, I'd like to introduce the team that is going to present to us. On my right hand is Tindile Baleni, Mrs. Baleni. She's our Chief Executive Officer. On my left, I've got Tulisile Mashanda. She is a member of the Audit and Risk. She's standing in place for Mtimunye, who could not be here today. On the extreme, I have our acting CFO, Zach Lombard. I also have other members of the team accompanying us. I've got at my back Estafel Yun. She handles strategy and all the arrangements that we for Parliament. And I've got
Zeki. Part of the furniture already.
Very useful part.
Sorry for that.
It's
very useful.
Uzetu Mackenzie is an operations in the CEO's office. And today I also brought our internal audit executive, Omaseki Malope. And then from DOE, I wouldn't introduce them, but my boss. Lloyd and Lotandi, yeah. Tandi Maimane, and then we also have from the Minister's Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Ivan. Oh, we also have representatives from the DM's office. Yes. Yes. Please introduce yourself, guys.
He's part of the furniture. Riamusiba. never mind.
The National Energy Regulator is a Schedule 3 company which was brought into existence via the Energy Regulator Act, Act number 204, Act number 40 of 2004. Okay. We regulate the electricity industry, we regulate pipe gas and petroleum pipeline. In executing our mandate, we always have this balance, uncomfortable balance, to look at the entities, the energy business, and the consumer, balancing, ensuring fairness with all of them. And, Chairperson, this is our last presentation to you as the energy regulator as we stand. At the end of the year, four of our members, part-time members, will exit the energy regulator. And I just needed to take this opportunity to reflect the shifts and the milestones we have achieved over the 4 years. And over the 4 years, we have strengthened governance at NERSA. And the minister was also quite strategic in appointing two regulators, one the CEO, who's on my right-hand side, and a member of the Human Resources Committee. That really gave a big shot of energy into the organization. The other areas of strengthening were the Audit and Risk Committee. They have reviewed rigorously the functioning and of the internal audit function. In the past, the audit function reported to the CEO. During our tenure, that function now reports directly to the Chair of Audit and Risk for independence, but has a relationship with the CEO. In terms of the Human Resources Committee, human resources has been a challenge for us at NERSA. But during our term, we've been able to understand exactly where our weaknesses are. We undertook a major review by Deloitte and Touche, which pinpointed all our weak areas. And we are now on a roadmap towards recapitalization of the unit and also developing an organizational review and the integrated human capital strategy. One of the things we did very early during our term, we made sure that all regulator members were on the same page in terms of governance. We went for board governance training and the King Code, and we've continued that training to all the members that come on board. And this has been a strength that we have kept throughout the period. And in terms of risk, we've been very consistent in reviewing our risk register annually, and recently we updated our risk mechanism. The implementation of King 3 and other corporate governance are regular items for us, and we have been able to send reports to DOE on board governance, evaluation of the board performance. You need to be moved to the next one. Okay. We leave at the end of the year a financially sound going concern, Chairperson. And this has been achieved through approval of the relevant financial policies and procedure, dutiful collection of levies and refunds, fine-tuning financial reporting, and rigorous analysis of the management accounts in line with approved programs. Halfway through our term, we realized that the expenditure was not linked to the program, and we fine-tuned that very strongly. We've also achieved, Chairperson, the eighth consecutive, I don't want to say clean audit, unqualified audit. Okay? And the Auditor General has also given us positive outcomes on our performance audit twice now. The complementary role of the Finance Committee and the Audit and Risk they work together. That has also strengthened our government remarkably, because they check one another from time to time. Chairperson, I think we have come to the stage where we can say NERSA has become a credible, predictable, and consistent regulator. We welcome your comments on regulating everything. We will promise to live up to your ideals when achieved. We've maintained close adherence to regulatory principles. All decisions made by the regulator are tested against these principles. And at this point in time, in excess of 90% of our decisions have not been questioned. We are awaiting the two that are coming up for decision. Yes. And, yeah, but we are ready for those. We benchmark ourselves against the best internationally. And in Africa, we think we are leading, and we have provided mentorship to other African regulators. So, Chairperson, we actually, I think, have now matured as a regulator. It's still continuous improvement, but I will now leave the CEO to take you through the details of the annual report, and later on, Ms. Mashanda will talk to the specific issues that you have requested us to talk to on audit and risk. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try and go through the presentation quite quickly. I will skip a few slides of matters that I believe, Chair, to borrow your words, are now part of the session, hope usefully so. So issues such as the vision mission, they haven't changed. We remain committed to them, but can I just, with your permission, go through quite fast. The values, Chair, and then the regulatory principles, which the Chairperson has referred to, these are very, very important to us, and we continue to guard them and ensure that we comply with them. Our mandate, Chair, all the laws were passed by your good self, so I'm going to just say that we've got the Primary Act, which is the NERSA Establishing Act, as well as the Underlying Industry Regulation Act, and then we've got three acts. We call them levies, because those are the three acts that enable us to collect our levies from the industry we regulate, and internationally and generally that's regarded as enhancing the independence of the regulator. And then the three facilitating acts, apart from the Constitution of the Country, the Public Finance Management Act, the Promotion of Access to Information Act, as well as the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. Those are very important, particularly to ensure that we also implement our regulatory principles. The strat plan for 2012-13 to 2016-17. Chair, this is a high-level component of the strategic plan that we came and presented in Parliament in April, but just to recap and refresh our memories, our strategic outcome-oriented goals are cascaded from the 12 national outcomes, as well as those of the Department of Energy, and these underscore NERSA's role in facilitating the achievement of the national economic and socio-economic and socio-political development agenda. The strategic outcomes are, the strategic outcome-orientated goals are, facilitating security of supply in order to support sustainable socio-economic development in South Africa, facilitating investment in infrastructure in energy, so it's security of supply, and then investment, promoting competitive and efficient functioning of the energy industry, facilitating affordability and accessibility, and lastly, to position NERSA as a credible and reliable regulator. All our goals are towards ensuring the achievement of socioeconomic development in the country. Links to the 12 national outcomes, we link to six of the 12 outcomes, the even-numbered one, so National Outcome 2, a long and healthy life for all South Africans. That's what electricity contributes to in particular. Decent employment through inclusive economic growth. when there's electricity, the economy grows and decent jobs can be created. Six, an efficient, competitive and responsive economic infrastructure network. So ensuring that the infrastructure is built, competitive and provides good quality of supply. Eight, sustainable human settlements and improved quality of household life. Directly, you can, we know how electricity contributes to that. People don't have to fetch wood far to cook and lose time, and those types of issues. Environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. This is talks to the area where we're supporting the government's move towards the enhanced component of renewable energy in the energy mix of the country. The last one being an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and an empowered, fair, and inclusive citizenship, and this we do through our public participation processes. Chair, I am not going to then go through the next set of slides because they just talk a little bit deeper to how we link to the outcomes, but can I just then just go through to save time? And then we come to the National Development Plan. The committee had requested that we demonstrate how our actions and our strategic plan links to the National Development Plan, the specific components of the National Development Plan that we see as relevant and we contribute to as NERSA is the Milestone 4, establishing a competitive base of infrastructure, human resources, and regulatory frameworks. So the infrastructure component, regulatory frameworks, and indirectly the human resources component. Broadening the ownership of assets to historically disadvantaged groups. This we do through third-party access regulation and promotion of HDSAs in the petroleum pipelines industry. 10, producing sufficient energy to support industry at competitive prices, ensuring access for poor households while reducing carbon emissions per unit of power by about one-third. Again, it's a combination of a few things I referred to there. So, again, with your permission, Chair, can I not specifically go into all the detail, but the deck of slides is available to members, and we can clarify through questions as we move along. The next key national program that we contribute to is the National Infrastructure Plan. The National Infrastructure Plan has got a number of strategic integrated projects, and ones that are specifically related to electricity is 8, 9, and 10, green energy in support of the South African economy. So we have facilitated in terms of how we regulate the introduction of RE, and we have even amended our green code to accommodate for technical implications of including wind as well as solar onto the grid. The electricity generation to support socioeconomic development, Chair, ensuring that those decisions were taken and taken on time, and monitored as we've moved along. And then, of course, electricity transmission. We regulate transmission. We have specifically done quite a bit of work in that area in the past year and ensuring that the distribution industry performs as it's supposed to perform, apart over and above just making sure that there's access to electricity. Again, Chair, if you allow me, I will skip the details of how we contribute to each one of those. And procurement. This brings me to our strategic objectives as an organization, as NERSA. Chair, our objectives are as follows. One, to establish a regulatory environment that facilitates investment in the energy infrastructure, ensuring that energy supply is certain and secure for current and future user needs, ensuring that there's a fair competition within the energy industry, ensuring that regulatory certainty exists, ensuring that energy is accessible and affordable, and lastly, ensuring that NERSA is established and positioned as a credible and reliable regulator. You'd see that the objectives here talk directly to our strategic-oriented goals. The programs that we have put in place to ensure that our strategic-oriented goals are achieved is Program 1, setting and approving of tariffs and prices, 2, licensing and registration, 3, compliance monitoring and enforcement, 4, dispute resolution, including mediation, arbitration, and the handling of complaints, 5, setting of rules, guidelines, and codes for the regulation of the three industries, And lastly, establishing NERSA as an efficient and effective regulator. Now, Chair, I come to the part I suppose you've been asking, when do they get to? This is now a summary of our performance for the financial year past, 2012-13, against the objectives as we had set for ourselves. 2012-13 is in green, and 2011-12 is in yellow. Just for comparative purposes, Chair, you will see that total, we achieved 80% of annual performance plan compared to 66% in the previous year. The number of external dependencies have pretty much stayed the same, but, Chair, we've been able to move significantly internal constraints to facilitate delivery and performance. We moved from 25% to 5%. Chair, if I take the achievements by industry, we'll try as well not to read everything on the slides. We'll just hit on the highlights. One of the highlights of performance this year was the fact that we approved an average annual increase of 8% in the revenue requirements for EFCOM for the next 5 years, which we did, Chair, within 4 months instead of 6 months. The applicant and the licensee applied late, but we still made the decision on February 28, which is quite critical in relation to all the other timelines. We also, Chair, want to highlight that out of 186 municipal and private distributors, we had 183 submit. So 98% of distributors are now applying to the regulator for their tariffs to be approved. And, Chair, even our, in terms of monitoring and evaluation, we've observed that the level of compliance is about there as well. So we things are getting better. We've dealt with the other components, Chair, of the tariff, the inclining block tariff structure, the EFCOM retail structure, the standard tariff. We are very happy that we have been able to liaise with the Grulen municipality to introduce a resale tariff. This was an area that was almost always beyond the reach of the regulator. And in collaboration with this particular municipality, Chair, we've been able to introduce it, and we see ourselves being able to spread it across the country. In terms of generation, I think one would like just to focus and highlight the fact that we have approved a renewable energy grid code, which would facilitate the participation of and the introduction of renewable energies into the grid, Chair. Under distribution, Chair, I suppose the highlight there is the 9 distribution licenses for the IPPs, and we completed the evaluation of the distribution network planning and audit as we had planned it. And in relation to other matters that we've dealt with, we've published the first bulletin on monitoring of the renewable energy performance and analysis of the first window of independent power producers that were approved by national government. And we've assented and concurred to 3 determinations that the Minister of Energy has made in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act. The piped gas industry highlights as well the pricing and tariffs. We have approved the maximum prices of piped gas for 3 years. Chairperson, in the previous period, we reported that we had approved the methodology for maximum prices. It becomes significant that we have approved the maximum prices of piped gas because up until the 26th of March 2014, Sasol has been regulated by agreement. And now that agreement is coming to an end. We're now resorting to regulating them under the Piped Gas Act. And it was important that we approve the prices this year so that Sasol can then go and negotiate and settle discounts with their customers so that come the 27th of March 2014, we are under the auspices of the Act and there's no default agreement regulation. The rest are some of the things that we just do as part of the conveyor belt. Chair, we approved procedures for NERSA participating at the Competition Tribunal's proceedings. This for us is big because it's a particular methodology mechanism of ensuring that we work in a complementary manner with the regulatory authorities that have got a concurrent jurisdiction with NERSA. So it does become important, and we possibly will be using it as a model to ensure cooperation with other entities. So I think the issue of investigations as well, We have continued to up the game around investigations, and the observation that we have made is that we have found higher levels of compliance from the licensees, particularly SASO, compared to the experience in previous years. Again, Chair, that's the conveyor belt, the work that we do. Those are the amounts of activities that we conducted there, split by different activities. Petroleum pipeline industry, Chair, pricing and tariffs, we approved the Transnet petroleum pipeline, 8.3% increase as well. We've increased our investigations, Chair, and we have been able to resolve quite a lot of those, as I had indicated even in last year's presentation, Chair. There seems to have been a debating point around whether or not people who run storage facilities out there come under the auspices of the Act or not. We've increased our investigations. A lot more entities are applying for their licenses and are operating license activities. Chair, one of the key issues as well that we have embarked upon, although it's not for the previous financial year, it's the current financial year, we are conducting a prudency evaluation for the costs that have been incurred by Transnet pipelines in the construction of the NMPP, given the cost overruns that have been experienced in that space. And lastly, in cross-cutting issues, just in terms of highlights, Chair, we hosted the first South African Energy Regulators Conference in August 2012, and the next conference will be in March 2014. And, Chair, we would like members of this committee to attend, but you will be notified on time. And one of the other key deliverables under the cross-cutting regulatory area was the approval of harmonization of tariff methodologies. Now, this is harmonization across the three industries that we regulate. Initially, we had different methodologies. We have taken a decision to harmonize, and the harmonization seems to be vindicated by the two big decisions that we made on tariffs this year. Both came out at around 8%. So we're thinking that this something we're onto a good week at there, and we are further investigating complete harmonization. And our organizational, Chair, we have received a non-qualified audit, although albeit with an emphasis of matter, and the member of the audit committee will talk at length to that. And as Chair of RERA, we have contributed quite a bit to the progress that the Regional Electricity Regulatory Association of Southern Africa has achieved, and Chair, we did participate quite significantly in the 10th anniversary. Chair, we have reached the section that deals with financial performance, and at this point, with your permission, can I just request the CFO to take the committee through this section? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, CEO. And Chair, if we have your permission, I'll quickly take us through the financial performance of NERSA. The levies that we've received is 204 million, mainly from electricity, pipe gas, and petroleum pipelines, where electricity is contributing 106 million of the levies that we've received. The under recovery of the levies is about 8 million in total for all the industries. On that 8 million, what I can perhaps just mention is that the budgeted volumes we received from the industries. So that's where our budget is based on. And then on the expenditure side, we are about almost 33 million that is below the budget, coming in at 198 million, which represents a 14.6% underspending of the budget, the total budget of 231 million. And then on the following slide, we can see that the revenue that I've talked about, the variance is about 8 million. From what we've received actually compared to our budget. The reason for the lower levy income was mainly attributable to the electricity volumes that was lower, as well as petroleum pipelines. Pipe gas was a bit higher, the volumes, and therefore the higher income. And then on the expenditure side, as I've mentioned, 32, almost 33 million. Remuneration, the main contributor, about 20 million due to the vacancy rate that we've got. And then the other operating costs, more or less in line, and consultants, 11 million. That gives us a net surplus of about 25 million. And as normal, we give that net surplus back in the year to come to the industry, to the specific industries, and that is ring fence. And then on the following slide, I can, as the chair has indicated to us, for the implementation of the annual performance plans and the financial performance, we've linked the expenditure to the various programs that is that we're running. And on that slide, you can see per program what is our expenditure compared to the various implementation of our performance plans. And then I think on the last slide, we've got irregular expenditure of that amounted to about 2.7 million. That's not yet condoned. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 1,222 rand. And then we can just mention there that the Audit and Risk Committee, they consider the quarterly management reports and the unaudited annual financial statements. They review the audited financial statements included in the annual report that's before you. And then on a quarterly basis, they monitor the implementation of the agreed action plans. And that's from my side. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO.
The audit outcome. Chair, this is a matter that's covered quite substantially in the presentation of the Audit and Risk Committee Chair. Can I rather ask her to present now or finish our presentation and then she will cover those areas? Okay. Thank you, Chair. We'll then beam these and the detail thereof when the... Chair, at the high level, we received an unqualified audit again this year. And it hasn't happened in the last 8 years. We, however, did get an emphasis of matter this year, Chair. And this emphasis of matter arose out of three particular issues. One, there was a general challenge around supporting documents attached before payment of invoices, so there's a particular challenge there. SARS is busy with the reconciliation process, and in fact, they were able to determine that, I think it was in the year 2006, NERSA didn't pay what was due to SARS. So SARS has decided to subject the whole account to a reconciliation. So that's a moving target. It's a matter that arises from previous financial periods. It just came out in this current reporting year, and we are dealing with it. Chair, there's another issue, and it will become apparent in the presentation of the Audit Committee, that relates to invoices that had been fraudulently issued on the organization, and these matters date back to 2002, but in the last period, in the last financial year, we decided to reverse those invoices and reconcile and report them properly. So the third area related to asset management, Chair, and this was an issue that the Auditor General had raised last year, and he felt that because it's come up again this year, he would then make it an emphasis of matter, Chair. In terms of staff analysis, Chair, I'm afraid here we are still going to get into trouble. Male-female, sitting at 54% and 46%, and the demographic profile. Chair, we are working on our employment equity, but overall meeting the EAP of the country. There's the breakdown there of the staff strength, actually. 13 resignations, 22 appointments, employment of people with disabilities. There we go. International activities, Chair, towards concluding. At the moment, as we indicated, NERSA is the chair and a member of the Executive Committee of the Regional Electricity Regulators Association of Southern Africa, and our objectives are capacity building and information sharing amongst regulators, facilitation of electricity supply, industry policy, legislation, and regulations. And this is to deal, Chair, with cross-border trading issues that arises very sharply in the SADC context. And lastly, regional regulatory cooperation, Chair. There's the membership. You'd see it's out of 15 SADC members, I think it's about 11. With Swaziland, Sarah having joined as the 10th member in 2012, Chair, our 10th anniversary, so we're quite happy with that. There are some of the evidence.
Who's not there?
Who's not in rarer Chair's entities like Botswana, Botswana is still well on its way because the country has not restructured the electricity industry to account for a regulator, but they are busy doing that. Mauritius chair is also on the way there, fairly advanced. Madagascar suspended, so they're not in, there's not even a discussion with them. Kenya chair. Kenya is not in Rwanda, it's in the Eastern Bloc, but they're members of AFUR. So those countries that are not in, it's largely because of where they are in terms of their electricity supply industry and the structure of the industry. Once they restructure it and they create regulators, chances are that we will see the regulators coming along. So the Swaziland Regulatory Authority chair was formed about 2.5 years ago, and they only appointed the CEO at the beginning of this year, but they have been observers within RARA for some
DRC.
Time. Chair, the DRC is not, it's part of, is it central?
No, it's part of SADC.
Chair, it's very interesting because sometimes they come through, sometimes they don't come through. But Chair, we meet them in the AFUR context, in the continental body context. Even in SADC meetings, energy ministers meetings, we have hardly ever had representation from DRC. I think DRC and Zimbabwe.
Sorry for that. But other members, we have just signed a major deal with DRC, granting a project. No, it's just a chatting because it sounds strange because it would have been ideal for them to be in our camp to ensure appropriate regulatory environment for such a major project.
Thank you, Chair. We will not lose them, Chair, because we through the African body, we do interact with the DRC, and the African body will see pretty much has similar objectives, and we'll deal with the issues there. So, Chair, with that, but we'll just change the presentation slightly and show some of the action. This is the top left, the person in the middle is the Deputy Minister of Energy in Namibia, and I'm sure this committee knows that gentleman. He was honored for his role in RARA. That's Mr. Simunda Mukwena. That's the Executive Secretary of RARA, the CEO of RARA, essentially. That's the CEO of the Namibian Energy Regulator, Electricity Regulator, that's just been transformed into the Energy Regulator. I do not know. And the lady in the red dress there is a member of the board of the Zimbabwean Energy Regulator, Chair, just to show that it is definitely SADC way. And then moving to the African Forum of Utility Regulators, again, we are a member of EXCO there. I think we were an inaugural chair of this structure, Chair, so the chairpersonship rotates. And at the moment, it is sitting with Tanzania. Also, it's a multi-utility regulator, regulatory association, so we have energy, water, telecoms, transport, as well as sanitation. In fact, we even have a construction of public infrastructure in another country. Again, the objectives, information sharing, capacity building amongst regulators, and the harmonization of regulatory policies and legislation now at a continental level. So this organization works under the auspices of the AU chair, although we are still sorting out and strengthening our relationship with the AU. There's the membership there, Chair, Algeria, Mauritania, Niger, now Niger, Mali, Senegal, Gambia, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Togo, Nigeria, Cameroon, Angola are observers, but Angola is active in SADC. Benin, and DRC is an observer in AFUR.
You see? Now I got it on remember because what Pindile said, no, DRC, even if it's not part of RARA, we catch up with it. But now he has something here, an observer. It's not kosher, unfortunately. Why the low number of members?
AFUR itself has had its own challenges, even though it is more than 10 years old. It hasn't been active at the level at which it should have been active to ensure that it gets everybody, or it gets all African countries under its membership chair. But we are aware that they are working very hard to get all African countries to belong to AFUR. The observer status is a very curious one within these associations, within multilaterals, because we see people observe for a long time, and then when their membership happens, it's such a seamless exercise. So we are very encouraged when a country is an observer, because we know that it is doing its due diligence and it's on its way to becoming a member. And then you've got another set of members on the right-hand side of the screen, Ethiopia observers, where the seat of the AU is. Uganda, Kenya, Tanzania, Malawi, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and Namibia, Mozambique, South Africa, Lesotho, and then another two observers, Rwanda and North Sudan. Chair, that's at the top there, it's executive of AFUR, with the executive director being one among those who are seated in white there. That's the executive secretary. This person, Chair, was appointed in 2012. The organization ran without a full-time incumbent for about 3-4 years. So you'd see that it's got its own set of challenges to deal with, Chair, but they are getting resolved. I think, Chair, we then conclude on that. We would like to thank the committee. And, Chair, we do believe that we're continuing to grow from strength to strength. And the results of our work continue to have a profound impact on the economy. There's a professor, Eberhardt, has quantified what the RE decision throughout the government system has brought in terms of billions of rands in the country. And Chair, we continue to deal with the fundamental regulatory challenge. And again, we have stabilized our staff turnover. We've improved our level of achievement relative to the annual performance plan. And, Chair, we continue to refine our practices so that we can become the best in class. With that, Chair, I'd like to thank you. I'd like to now open the presentation of the Audit Committee, Chair.
Chairperson, before the member of Audit and Risk Committee comes on board, I'd just like to just share with the committee and yourself that NERSA is one of the few SOEs that boasts 4 chartered accountants on our board and committees, and Umiz Mashanda is one of those chartered accountants. 3 of them are female, African female.
Frida, this Tindabafazi with chartered accountants, that is even more horrifying. You know, many people, Prof. Many people. Okay, over to you guys.
Thank you, Chair. Can I continue on? Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity to present. Our presentation is going to, the outline will be the background and the responsibility of the committee, work undertaken by the committee, the annual financial statements, the audit opinion on that.
Sorry, page 4.
Yes. Audit and Risk Committee's view on the control at NEXA and the steps taken to address the issues raised. Membership consists of 4 members, of which 2 are independent members and 2 are regulatory members, of which the chair is one of the energy regulator, and then the other executives are invited to the committee. I think the chair has spoken about the qualification of the individual members. I would like to draw the attention on the last member who resigned in October. He was a member with us up until he was appointed at ESCOM. So due to the conflict of interest and independence, then he had to resign to maintain that as a committee, we are an independent committee. This slide is on inductions and training that the company has as a policy to say everybody that comes on board are properly inducted on the roles and responsibilities that as members we are supposed to carry. And there is a comprehensive development plan to ensure that everybody is inducted on regulatory matters. Responsibilities of the audit committee. We've got an audit charter that is reviewed annually and that set out the responsibilities and duties of the committee. And our charter is being benchmarked against the PFMA and against the King's regulations so that we ensure that we practice good corporate governance. Our roles, among others, is to look at the effectiveness of the internal controls, and we then look at the adequacy and the accuracy of the financial information and performance information that is provided to audit to external auditors for year-end audit, and we approve the necessary audit frameworks and policies that are in place. Yeah. Audit work activities undertaken by the committee during the year. We have ensured that management have implemented all the action plans that they have agreed upon that resulted from various audits. We have ensured that we have put in place necessary controls to ensure that there is non-occurrence of those control weaknesses that we identified. We had approved the 2 plans, the internal audit 3-year plan and the annual audit plan for the auditors for AG before they came through to audit. And we have continuously played an oversight role in ensuring that there is a proper compliance framework in place and internal audit come through to ensure that all the controls and compliance that is in place, that they check on a regular basis, that laws and regulations are complied with. As a result of that, you find that the AG's report as well had emphasized that there were no issues regarding those areas. Okay, audit report. I think the CEO has and the chairperson highlighted that we have not received an unqualified report for a long time. However, this year we got an emphasis of matter. Maybe I think I would like to just give the details as well. We had a SARS obligation and a SARS liability that was discovered this year. But I think as a general rule, if SARS says you owe them money, you pay now and investigate later because you've got penalties and interest and all that. Because the more you don't pay, and if they say you are due, you pay. Because while we are still trying to investigate with SARS to understand as to the 2006 to 2010 prior years, what are the basis of them saying we owe that amount if we did not have that in our books. So that we're still investigating, and then I think later we'll report as to whether it was an actual liability. And as a result, the auditor then put it as an emphasis of matter. But with the reversal of an invoice, 2009, we had a fraudulent invoice, but our system picked it up and we never paid it. It stayed in the book as a payable up until we investigated, and at the end of the investigation, we discovered that we did not have this liability and it was not for any services that was rendered to us. And the amount was then reversed, but we needed to await the process because the accounting principle says if there's an invoice addressed to me, the auditor will say I did not raise it. But if you put in the book but not pay for it, then you have done your share for the audit, but the risk is when you pay for something that you never receive the services. So as a result, it was in the books, but we reversed it. And it was our own internal control processes that ensure that the payment is not made on services that was not rendered to us. The CEO mentioned the issue that the AG raised in prior year. Accounting principles detect that if you're using the asset and you said you're going to use it for 5 years and in year six you're still using it, it means that you did not estimate the useful life of the asset correctly. So you need to go back to say, this asset I said I was going to use it for 5 years, but now I'm year seven. It means that my estimation of 5 years was at that time not correct. So you then reevaluate the useful life of the asset and then make an adjustment. That was the reason behind that. This slide is on irregular expenditures and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. During the year, we incurred 2.7 million on irregular expenditure due to the fact that the proper approval processes did not happen on time. When you continued using a service of a photocopying machine, but without the proper approval, we extended a contract, so it results to that expenditure. But it's still under the process of investigation and follow due process for it to either be condoned or not to be condoned. And fruitless and wasteful expenditures incurred during the year, we paid late on our telecom bill, and we charged 1,200, which is under the PFMA definition of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the other one was when the approval of the director's fee were made to X amount and we paid a different amount, but the amount was condoned subsequently. actions taken to ensure what has been done to on the AG report. AG raised 18 matters, of which most of them were alluded to on the instances of matter. But to date, we have implemented 14 of those 18 matters raised by the AG. And the other four are due to be implemented in the next two quarters. Our views on the internal control environment. I think as a committee, we are confident that there are no material deficiencies in the systems of internal control, because as a result, we will not have picked up the issues of the fraudulent invoice. And the SARS issues we're still investigating, because our systems are in place to have picked it up. And if they're saying something to them, we're just trying to see as to how that will have happened, because there was no liability. So we're still following up on that. On practices and procedures, the robustness of our practices and procedures, we are currently in the process of implementing a new SCM system, which should ensure that some of the weaknesses that come with manual systems are detected. For example, when we go back to that invoice of the fraudulent invoice, it will have been picked up because there wouldn't have been an order that would have been generated to when somebody was receiving the invoice. So we're going to be trying to put this system such that some of the controls are built in into the system, and then we use the a lot of application controls to ensure that some of the issues that come with manual controls are evaded. And fix asset as well, management system, we have acquired a new system, because before we were using a different system, so uploading and working on two different systems had human errors. So as a result of the new system, it will then minimize those risks. On quarterly reporting, we sit quarterly and management produce a financial management accounts and quarterly performance information, and we interrogate the reports and we look into to ensure that whatever that has been planned, what has been planned and this is what is actually happening, we look at what are the variances and the explanations as well as to why are we not meeting targets or why are we ahead as to whether the budgets were not properly done. So we interrogate the systems that bring about the report that management presents to us. Evaluation of financial statements. At the end of the year, we review the financial report and for the disclosures and all the accounting principles and assumptions that are made to ensure that at the end of the day, when we present it to the Auditor General, the report fairly presents. And most of the issues that are raised by AG were identified by management. So they did not come from Auditor General. A step taken to address the issues raised. I think I've already spoken about the fact that 14 of the 18 matters raised have been implemented, and currently as well we are in the process of appointing the CFO, because currently our CFO is the acting CFO, and we are continuously looking into the report on progress made to date as onto the issues of internal control. Oh, thank you.
Chairperson, our report, we were just reviewing the journey we have traveled since 2010. And in 2010, when we had announced the tariff increase of 25%. It was the unions on one side, members of parliament on the other side, and everybody really screaming at us about the tariff. And when we announced this year, Chairperson, where we announced the 8% tariff increase, we were hoping to show you a picture where the Engineering News, which is a magazine for energy users, were saying that NERSA are the good guys, and there was relief with the 8%. Chairperson, on that note, I'd like to say NERSA has matured as a regulator. We continue to challenge ourselves against international benchmarks, but we look forward to questions, comments from committee members. Thank you.
Thank you very much. No. Mkuzwayo, NERSA cannot mature until it becomes fully fledged. First part, we must see you taking all the stuff and become a clear Makulubas. Then we can say, yeah, NERSA is fully fledged. But for now, I think for now, the area that you are given, you know, I think also all the members, what we need to note is that, just from a personal basis, it has taken time to actually grapple with what NERSA does. It's a bit complex. I mean, not that the department or others are not complex, but when you go deep into the various issues that you do, I mean, you do compliance, tariff determination, you chase people, you're also doing conflict, management, and all of that, you know, and you had Sasol to chase on the other hand, and all that at the same time. Surely, in that respect, you know, the work is quite admirable, you know, not to say the least. Thanks very much, Honourable Members, NERSA for that. But, you know, in what we're raising at the end of, at the beginning, the values and other stuff that you indicated, is that you highlighted predictability, transparency, independence, and integrity. Values that are highly linked, strongly linked, but very demanding. You know, not that other entities or even departments shouldn't be doing, but the fact that we have to ensure predictability is not just for internal purposes, but as you had already said, that you have a role to play in ensuring investments, you know. So it's not just Eskom, Putmapelo, which has run around and tried to get these billions, but I mean, even before you go out, you know, NERSA has got to contribute to create that environment so that when Eskom goes around, flies to Washington, Paris, and wherever, you know, even to African Development Bank, they go there with confidence because we have created that space for them. Honourable Members, I would like us to reflect a little bit on the implications on the end of term for commissioners and what does that, particularly in view of the legislative constraints. I'll say legislative constraints with the department listening very attentively because we have missed out. I mean, it's very clear that the NERA and ERA amendments, we can't handle them this term, particularly NERA, you know. We can only wish. Just running through a few things that I've noted, the resale of electricity, that's an interesting, you know, development. I'm sure in future the exercise we did with Ekurhuleni, is an issue that we'll really note, you know, and I would like to see how we can get SALGA's response and opinion on that, because if Sispindle, I'm right, that that's just one, shall I say, model for the rest of the 180 whatever of the distributors within SALGA community. Honourable Members, the achievement rate from 66% to 7% is worth noting, and particularly to me, even if it was lower, but I dare say boldly true that the fact that we're able to reduce internal constraints which are within your reach from 25 market down to 5% is also an achievement worth noting, you know. And I'd like to link that with your efficiency, if I can call it, when you compare performance and expenditure. And I would like us to, honourable members, to get NERSA to share with us in detail on that. Sorry, department, we will use that to chase you as well, assistant, but Lloyd. Although I'm not clear, honourable members, when you have 90% expenditure and equal to 90% performance, how can it be so equal? But what strikes me is when your expenditure is lower than your performance. Look, artificially, I hope I'm wrong, or ideally, I would start saying that it seems that's a reflection of efficiency. If it is, please share that with us, because then we can go around and say to other entities, and the department as well, boldly, that what's stopping you to share with us similar experiences? Not necessarily the whole department, but even if it's just one program whereby efficient deployment or utilization of resources can be exposed. I think also it's helpful that NERSA moves with the confidence that it's clear of the legislative environment within which it is operating. In fact, I'll give myself some time to look at it after the budget review process, because what's striking for members is the way NERSA has articulated that there are core laws that are your lifeblood. There are four blood corpuscles. But then there's the outer ring and other supportive laws, you know. And given the plethora of laws that influence us, I think even for other entities, it would be helpful that we have that understanding, you know, even in future, because then we can be able to know whether there's adequacy in legislation that we deal with on a daily basis. Just before I hand over to other members, I almost wrote here, let me read, Audit and Risk Committee not to explain reasons for irregularities, but its understanding and action it took. But you still swept the carpet out of beneath me, because you started making comments a little bit down the line, because I was quick to write that. But I still would like to emphasize that that's the kind of area we would like to see. I don't say you didn't do it, but I wish you could do it a bit stronger, this one, in future, because that's what we want from you. You are independent. You know, you say things without fear or favor. You know, whether the department is here or Omakhulu Basi, Mom Kuzwa, Mrs. Pindi, you know, it doesn't matter. You say things as they are. And also would like to see in future that you highlight the performance of internal audit, because that's the first point of call. They are with the department on a daily basis. They are part of the early warning system to the department, to NERSA. So we want to hear what was your take on them, even now, as well as the risk part of it. You are an audit and risk committee. The audit part, yes, we understand, but the risk as well. You know, how was risk analyzed? How was risk managed? You know, that would be very, very helpful. Members, the floor is yours. Honorable Maloto, followed by Honorable Frailing, followed by Prof, followed by Ndadesla. No, Honorable Slau, Ndadesla is not going to be a short stride. You have to say something yourself. He's shaking his head.
Chairperson, just a few questions. I'm looking at the performance bonuses of the executive. I'm not saying it's excessive. I didn't say it that way. But I just want to know what the remuneration policy of the of NERSA with specific reference to certain percentages, and what's the top notch of your percentage that you award to your executive. The second question, Chairperson, I've got six questions. I'll rattle through them quite quickly. There's an input made by the CEO. I don't have the page here, but I can refer to it if she's looking up for it. It's with regards to the mechanical failure on the DGP, the Durban Johannesburg pipeline. Can you just give us a bit of detail around that? What happened? If you are looking for the page, I can verify that and come back to you. The third question is that the electricity distribution license of Central Karoo District Municipality was revoked. What were the circumstances that led to that action? Fourthly, there were 13 storage licenses that were revoked. What were the reasons for revoking those licenses on page 46 of your annual report? And the Central Karoo one is page 43. The next question is that municipalities are struggling with the implementation of IBT. The target was to have 65% of the municipalities submitted the information with NERSA, but only 60% have done so. Have you managed to establish what are the reasons for the non-compliance from the municipality side? What's the intervention that's required or assistance to ensure that the municipalities comply with the issues of IPT? Just for the acting CFO also to, and his keep for coming here, I would want to pose a question to him. I think at the end, you are indicating that you manage interest rate risk. I'll look for the page just to be specific. But if I'm starting to find it, I'll just ask you a question. I mean, the direct question that I want to pose to you is, how do you manage the interest rate risk that you have alluded to? Because you are concerned that those fluctuations in variable in the variable rate might impact adversely on the surplus or the deficit. If you are looking for the page number, I'll look for it and come back to you about that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, NERSA. We meet again. it's good, and I think we do meet in better times as well. As you said, I think everyone cheered your announcement of an 8% increase, except for one party, and that was Eskom. They obviously weren't too happy with it. And of course, you're always going to be caught between this. But, you know, what I'm interested in is the kind of long-term sustainability of that particular tariff determination. Because what we saw, I think it was today or yesterday, S&P just downgraded Eskom's credit rating. Now, of course, this was one of the arguments that Eskom put forward. I mean, I think you still made the right choice and the right determination. And what was interesting in the S&P's ruling on their downgrading was that they mentioned the fact that there could be an under-recovery of revenue, particularly in the outer years of the NYPD. What they didn't seem to mention was the kind of ballooning costs of Medupi and Kasile, and the fact that this is obviously having an impact on it as well. And I'll be interested to hear what your comments are with regards to that, how you see this going forward. Particularly then also as to what kind of role are you playing? I know I did ask this last year, but I mean, I think I'll continue to ask this, is what kind of role are you playing in terms of ensuring that the costs around Medupi and Kasile are in fact kept to a minimum? And what role are you playing in ensuring that those kind of penalty clauses on those contractors are in fact enforced? I'd just be interested to hear again and to see what your ongoing report is with regards to that. Then just going to some of the other issues is that I'm also interested in the BHP Billiton contract, which has now been handed over to you guys. I mean, Eskom's given you the nice job. But where exactly are we in this process? Because clearly Eskom couldn't renegotiate the deal and they've handed it to you. And why I'm particularly interested as well is to know what kind of resources you've dedicated in terms of looking at this particular contract. I know that you are following a certain public participation process, but have you brought in certain experts that have got some experience in terms of these commodity contracts around the world to analyze whether this contract was in fact drafted according to the right conditions? Because from what I've heard is that one of the worst things about this contract was that it was on a 25-year period with no review mechanisms put in place, which seems to me completely ludicrous given the way that other commodity contracts are in fact done around the world. And I just ask this in the context of, have you got experts looking at this to see whether in fact this contract was drafted correctly and was a balanced one, or what kind of resources are you dedicating to? Because obviously South Africa is waiting to hear exactly what's going to go on with that one. Then just moving on to other issues, just looking at the issue of small-scale embedded generation. I went to visit an office park just down the road here, the Black River Park one, which has got the largest rooftop solar installation in South Africa, which I put on. Very interesting project, and in fact it signifies a kind of wave of the future. They're getting good IRRs in terms of the installation of the solar panels. I think a lot of office parks will be looking at this. But the question that they're asking, there seems to be a lot of confusion around whether such installations in fact need to get generating licenses from NERSA and what the situation is within that regard, particularly if they're going to be selling their energy to the same block, but it's in fact on a different earth. How does this all work? What have you come up with rules for that? And just going into the future, are you looking at developing guidelines for small-scale embedded generation? Because at the moment, I know a lot is left up to municipalities, but have we got kind of guidelines which NERSA can give towards some kind of a roadmap towards households and office blocks around that? And those particular ones. The same would also be asked with regards to time of use meters. Are you also looking at those particular issues and looking at a particular rollout? I know Sunedi's looking at it, but from a regulatory point of view, are you looking at any issues with regards to that? Then just going to some of your issues in your annual report, looking at, I mean, what I find interesting is that a number of your targets, in fact, were removed by the minister. Well, I wouldn't say number, but a couple of targets were removed. And when I look at the reasons for that, some of it was to do with on the municipal level, and it seemed to be that she was saying that you don't really have the authority, it's a different sphere of government, so therefore you don't have the authority to do that. But what all of this does indicate to me, and in fact you indicate in the annual report, is that some kind of guiding vision needs to come from a national level to deal with this issue of electricity distribution. And I'd just be interested to hear what your thoughts are on that. Given that you've worked a bit in this space, you've dealt with these issues in some manner, but yet haven't really had all the power that you need to be able to take the kind of action that you need on a municipal level, do you concur with that statement that we need to develop some kind of a national roadmap with regards to how we deal with electricity distribution going forward, and what would such a roadmap contain, just from a regulatory point of view? Then just looking at, I'm also interested on page 71, you talk about a gas research study that you did. Let me just get to it. You said, approved a research study on the results of gas exploration activities in South Africa and Mozambique. I'm just interested as to whether you can make that available to us. I'm very interested to see what effects that would have going forward. And then just lastly, I mean, I was interested to hear you talking about the Southern African Regional Electricity Regulators meeting. I think that's what you called it. But are you looking at a regional level, and how far down the line are we in terms of this kind of South African power pool and in terms of actually developing a regional electricity grid that can both, we can send energy from South Africa but also receive from the rest of Southern Africa. To what extent are we looking at how we make the regulatory conditions such that we can really procure large amounts of energy from outside of South Africa, such as Mozambique, and start to really provide the proper incentives for people to set up generation that can feed back into it? I'm just interested to hear how far down the line we are with that and where you see that going in the future. Thank you, Chair. Prof?
The thing is, just one question. On page 67 of the presentation, on our four objectives, my interest is your third objective, harmonization of regulatory policies and legislation. Once you say legislation, you are talking to me, and I'm trying to get a sense as to how can we get on board on that train? Where do we feature in so that if there's anything that needs little legislation, we're able to? Especially if you were a chair, you are not now. I'm trying to, if you could keep us on board, if there's something that we need to take up. Thank you, Chair.
That all?
You asked me to speak, Chair.
You didn't find it. I just got raised by him. No, I'm not happy if you didn't put in. Unless the trade and industry is really exhausted you.
It does exhaust. Chairperson, firstly, one would like to thank NERSA for once again coming to present a clean audit to us. What do you call that?
Unqualified.
An unqualified audit to us. And, of course, with some matters of emphasis, which I think our chartered accountant in NERSA will explain why he's late in telco. Because this was an easy thing to avoid by paying on time, you know. And is this other document, Chairperson, about the key points for discussion? And I'm not sure if this is our document or it was NERSA's document, because most of it here is questions and answers. It's a question and answer kind of document. I'm not sure whose document it is or is it there, and why they did not speak to it. Because it is an important document that tries to speak to NERSA beyond this curtailed area of operation that seems to be sitting before us for all the years. It is my view, Chairperson, and I'm not sure, and one must also try and get an understanding from what the Chairperson was saying about this is the last meeting that you address us in the manner you are. You did not go further to say why do you think it's the last meeting. Whether you are resigning, because what we got clear is that one of you has resigned to join ESCOM, and conflict of interest could not allow. Maybe a clearer explanation as to why did you say that would be necessary, Chairperson, as well as the issue of why paying Telkom late would be necessary, so that it should not happen again. We don't want that those emphasis next time. The question, Chairperson, is there is strong discussions. It's an agreement entered into already between us and Mozambique, between us and DRC on matters of hydro and gas. And I think we are just about to enter into agreements between us and France, I think, on matters of nuclear. And the issue of National Energy Regulator of South Africa. And its mandate to regulate these particular areas I have mentioned. How far are we? Is there any intention to see NERSA regulating in these particular areas? Gas, not the gas pipes, gas. Hydro, also not the hydro pipes, but hydro. Nuclear, not the nuclear pipes, but nuclear. Because these areas, Chairperson,
not funny.
These areas, Chairperson, are areas that can make South Africa go into the green economy. We can have green South Africa with these three areas. Though we will be, the other two we will be importing, and there is more emphasis from the economists that. And then the financial governors that South Africa must begin to look more at towards exporting, because the imports are creating an imbalance in our inflation. But clearly, Chairperson, if we talk green economy, we talk these three areas, and these three areas are a showcase. Which we are not able to simply achieve tomorrow because of the cost involved. But they are definitely the key areas of energy that could ensure that we have a green South Africa tomorrow, as if we had the money to implement them. Are we going to create more other regulators? Because we have a regulator, I think, for nuclear now. Are we going to have another regulator for hydro and another one for gas? Or do we use the same regulator that we have? And what is the relationship between the nuclear regulator and the energy regulator? Is nuclear treated not as energy? Where are we going? I know it's a policy question. Difficult for NERSA to respond to, but whether such a thinking exists within the operations of energy regulation in South Africa. But secondly, Chairperson, I view NERSA's job as regulation. I am not sure that NERSA can really be able to answer questions in relation to infrastructure development of energy. Like if Eskom is building a Medupi and the price of building Medupi's infrastructure is getting more and more expensive, I do not think NERSA really can be involved in that particular matter as its mandate. I don't think it is within its mandate to get involved there. They can be involved in what comes out of Medupi in the end, but not in building Medupi as an infrastructure. Thanks.
Okay, we still have some time. You'll hear from the answers. I think that's just something. Yeah, the falling cost of Medupi, it's a tricky thing. To me, I wanted to link it up as to, so finally, on the NPP, the pipe, you're doing a prudency audit. So I would deliberately provoke a variant to Honorable Henning's question that, look, don't you have space for Medupi on electricity to do a prudency audit? You wanna, and that is now, rather than what you are concerned about, because it's a very striking kind of audit. You know, even when I was doing the reading the report, that I picked up very, very sensitively. And I think my question is loaded, because even something that can be developed, I would even be keen that it goes to up to a policy level. because it would be a very brilliant tool, Boudloid, to stand even in future. You know, this prudency audit, you know, it might help because, you see, sorry to take it because they still have to answer, but there's been this bad practice, man, with our departments. The program, we call it 10 billion. By the time we finish, it's 70 billion. Aibu. What happened? You know, I mean, it has just been some kind of a trend now in South Africa. Hello, it's just easy. You know, I couldn't like it. You know, so if it could be one of the practices, you know, sorry to be elaborate because you still have to answer, but I want you to understand why we are so keen on this prudency audit, you know, and how even it can be crafted such that it has preemptive measures, because audit is always a reactive action. You do it afterwards, you know, to see if it has a way of having a very strong, you know, proactive character. Then as in one, we can you can work out something. And also, just on Mr. Khoeni's question on BHP billeting, much as I'm keen on that, but please make sure that you don't compromise yourself because it's a very sensitive thing, you know. Honorable Khoeni, we've been approached even quietly about that, you know. So I don't mind them answering, but as long as they don't compromise their investigation at this stage, you see. Because at the end of the day, you still have to come back to us and give us a full account of the work you've done. Yes, sir.
Hey, Chair, you just provoked something which I forgot about. no, just, I mean, the other issues that seem to have been removed from some of your targets is a lot of the issues around the sustainability of Eskom and the electricity supply industry. Now, I'm just interested, I mean, perhaps you can explain. I see the Minister of Energy said on the 12th of February 2013 that this must now go to the approved ESCOM's annual regulatory report, so things like determining the baseline for interest cover ratio from ESCOM audited financial statements, the weighted average cost of capital, all of those things. Now, I mean, from what it seems, and I don't know, I mean, maybe you can enlighten me, is that it's now the burden has been shifted onto ESCOM to say what impact the particular tariff determination has had on its own operations and it going forward in terms of its own sustainability. Whereas before it seems to have sat with NERSA to look at those particular issues. Is that the correct understanding, or if you can explain to me what this is all about, because it does mention it in the annual report, Chair.
I'm saying this is of course, unfortunately, some of the things that one may have just overlooked. What page is that?
That's on page 59 and 60. It's quite interesting because quite a few of them are removed. And I'm just in. So, baselines for debt equity ratio from ESCOM financial statements, NYPD 2 impact analysis report. Seems like the burden's been shifted onto ESCOM to look at those issues rather than, in fact, NERSA. But I could be reading this wrong. I'm just interested to see.
Yeah, but right, Sustandi, I hope you know that. You may not be in a position to answer now, but it's just interesting to see a target or responsibility, you know, removed, you know. I mean, from my side, philosophically, I would say it doesn't matter where is it relocated. We'll still chase it. We'll still chase it. But still, it would be nice to pick up the rationale behind. Suspended, so if you are able to help us with that for now, it's no big deal. Please go ahead. Prof.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just curious to find out who audits the audit data general. I'm trying to be comfortable with an AG auditing NERSA 2728, 2910, and come in 2013 says you owe something back and dents the book in the process as if it's you who did something. Is that, I don't know.
You know, Prof, obviously you and I cannot discuss what I'm going to say in this room, but remind me, I once went to Ubabu Kwala, Harry Kwala, and said something. He asked a similar question. I'll tell you, not this one. Okay, Nersa, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just respond to a few of the questions and leave some of my colleagues to take on. The first question I'd like to respond to is the question from Honorable Moloto on remuneration policy. Yes, we have a very clear remuneration policy. We have a challenge that we need to share with the chairperson and the committee here, where our full-time regulators are remunerated in line with the Director General, and their remuneration needs to be approved by the Minister, all in concurrence with the Finance Minister. So, yet, we have our own remuneration policy, which remunerates executive managers that lie right below the FTRM, which is much more competitive because we compete for skills. So we don't quite match what the Eskom and Transnet pay, and hence we lose a lot of our people to these organizations. So as a committee in human resources, we're forever trying to say, how do we develop a proposition for the employee that keeps them within NERSA? Because developing the skills of analyzing what Eskom submits and what Transnet submits over a period of time and getting to ask critical questions, it takes time. And therefore, we have to keep that. So these bonus payments were made in line with the determinations of their full-time regulators' salaries and in line with the bonus policy that we have. Our bonus policy says they can earn between 10 and 15% of their annual. And our REM committee took a decision to err on the side of maximum, purely because when you look at our regulators, our full-time regulators, and you look at what people who are at the same level working at Eskom and other organizations, they were underpaid, clearly, because the government scale does not match what industry is paying outside. It's a matter that is still on the minister's table, which we are awaiting approval on. I need to share with you on that. And I also want to refer to Honorable Silao. You mentioned you want to know why this is my last meeting with you. Our term comes to an end in December, our current term, and this is four regulator members that come to an end. The deputy chairperson, myself, the chairperson of regulator, and Ms. Banda, Whittington Banda. So at the end of the year, our term comes to an end. Therefore, we won't be here in future. But the other regulators, and I'm glad to say that for continuity, in the committees, we've added new members, and Utuli is one of them, so that even though we come off the stage, some of the work that we have built will continue in the committees. On terms of the BHP bulletin matter, Honorable Khreiling, as my CEO has now taught me, those matters are sub judice, and she's taught me not to comment on them until the lawyers have done sufficient research and we've checked it backwards and forwards. So I will not comment on that. I shall leave the rest of the questions to be answered first by the audit chairperson specifically, and then I think the CEO has a big chunk to go through.
I think I'll start with the easy one.
You just missed one thing, Mam Kuzwayo. Even if you said I will not comment on that, but the emphasis is that at some stage all will come back and be accounted here.
On that, I'm not going to generate controversy, but I'm just interested, not in the content of it, but just what process is being followed, just so that I'm aware of what kind of timelines we're looking at and what process. You don't have to comment on the merits or anything like that. That's what I'm mainly kind of interested in.
I'll leave it.
thank you. I'll start with the telecom one, if it is that. During the year, we experienced a strike at the post office, and telecom doesn't say you pay on receipt of invoice. It was when the due date is. So if the post office, if we don't receive the invoice, the meter starts running. Hence, there are so many reasons to not to pay on time, because they look at payment not as to when you receive the invoice. And for us, we pay 30 days after receipt. And you just go through the approval process as well. But we, during the year, we experienced a couple of strikes. I hope I've answered that part of the question. On the risk function, I think there's a section here in the financial statement which identifies as to the process that we follow as a company when we first risk process. We sit as management and we identify the risk of the company, and then we develop a framework to look at our risk appetite and as in line with the framework that was identified, and then we look at those risks, and then we look at the impact as well as to, if it was to happen, what would be the impact of that, and then we rank and rate the risk, and then after that, then we look at the top 10 risks, and then we allocate or appoint risk champions according to the risks that have been identified, and then on a quarterly basis, then we get a report as to what those risk champions have done to ensure that those risks do not materialize. And then internal auditors will go in and check as to whether those intended risks that we assumed and actually what are they, and then we end up with their residual risk, and then we then look at whether the priorities of those risks, do they still remain on the top 10 or they go up and down depending on to the different environments. Three. Okay, thank you. I hope I've answered.
No, but I'll let you off the hook for now. You don't tell us how it's being done. For example, I've been a chair of the audit committee in my previous year. So even on a personal basis, I'm less interested. I want to know, in your findings to your work, how did NERSA perform? Did NERSA analyze the risks properly? Did NERSA manage those risks properly now? Never mind now. We know we need to give suspended. And also the internal audit. Okay. You're letting go of the hook.
No, Chair. she's brand new from the box. I thought that I'd spotted the issue around the performance of internal audit, and in fact we should have been upfront with it. This year we conducted a preliminary quality assurance review of our internal audit function, which is a requirement in terms of international auditing standards, but this review should be done every 5 years. So we did a preliminary quality assurance review, and there were a number of findings that pointed to both internal audit and the way the audit committee works. And we then responded and corrected, as pointed out. We are now, as we speak, Chair, going through the final quality assurance by the Institute of Internal Auditors, and the report will go to the Audit Committee of October, Chair, and it's material we would want to share with the committee going forward, Chair, at some point. But we have just assessed our internal audit function, Chair. And some of the issues that arose in the QAR were around the focus on risk management relative to financials, and apparently it's a usual thing that audit committees tend to focus more on the financials than the risk, but we are in the process of upweighting our risk management work. We've approved new frameworks and put a lot of mechanisms to uplift the risk management assurance review that is being done by the audit committee and the way management actually responds to risk management. So that's one area, Chair, that we are focusing on. Okay. Chair, if I then start with the questions,
Member Moloto, the chairperson of NERSA, has dealt with the bonus issue. The issue around the mechanical failure of DJP, Chair, it was apparently the pipe had rusted and oil leaked and it mixed with the product and they had to contain it and fix it. And that's testimony to why the DJP has to be replaced, chairperson, I suppose. The Karoo District Municipality license that was revoked. If I look at the name of the entity, it's Karoo District Municipality. Now, there's an issue in the Structures Act of Local Government that allocated functions to layers of municipalities that didn't have the wherewithal to execute the functions. And top of my head, bulk water and electricity were one of those things that were allocated to district municipalities, and yet they sit above local municipalities. They are shelves, and local municipalities have got the capacity. So it was just a reallocation share where it went down to the municipality that had the distribution facility and infrastructure and people instead of a district municipality that sits as a shelf. Okay. Revocation of storage licenses. Chair, that's an area that we've seen a hive of activity around. Part of it is that oil companies have adopted certain business models, and some of them are reducing their participation in storage. The bulk of them is that the pipeline is following a slightly different route, so they're following where the pipeline is going and moving out of areas where the pipeline is no longer there, so it doesn't make sense for them to stay there. But in some instances, it's been very interesting where we revoke licenses and then we get new applications. We revoke licenses and then we get new in relation to the same facilities. So it does look like all majors have taken certain views, but there are smaller players that are beginning to come to take up those licenses. So we would attribute it to that.
I would like us to monitor that with the department, in particular with Lloyd. I mean, it's a very interesting trend. You know, we've been under pressure from black-owned companies complaining about lack of access. Not that I'm saying I'm doing any judgment, but it's just an interesting thing that we just let's collect the data and see what comes out of the analysis on that. I mean, both NERSA and the department, because you'll be looking at it from different, perspectives. Sure, thanks. Kobasa.
We will come back to the committee on that. We'll do the analytics. In relation to the IBTs, Chair, when NERSA took the decision on IBTs, we overlooked one critical thing. And the issue was this, that for inclining block tariffs to work, you need a particular customer mix to be able to do your blocks in a manner that ultimately, as an entity, you become revenue neutral. So you lose money at the bottom end consumer, but you recover it at the top. And the blocks were done, published, and it turned out that those blocks could only work in relation to Eskom, Eguruleni, as well as Joburg, only. Not even Tshwane could match the blocks. Now, this goes back to the issues of the characteristics of the distribution industry in the country, where the bulk of municipalities practically sit with only domestic customers as their profile, as a total set of customers. So if you have blocks that do not have consumption levels that are relevant to what's happening on the ground, then the IBT became a nightmare. And as NERSA, we quickly recognized that, and we reworked the blocks, and we called it the customization of the IBTs. So we worked with each municipality, and we looked at the lowest consumers and the highest consumers, and we redefined the blocks. And once we did that, we found that a whole lot of municipalities moved quickly to implementing IBTs because municipalities realize that it's in their interest to implement the IBTs. So we have now, as we sit, 80% level of compliance from municipalities. The 20% that haven't moved to implement IBTs have submitted their implementation plans, and we are working with them to customize for their areas and to also look at system issues that they need to then deal with to implement. So we suspect that next financial period, when we report, we'll sit at a pretty much high level of compliance by municipalities. Zach, there was a question around interest rate risk management.
Thank you, CEO. And Chair, on the management of the interest rate risk, what we're trying to do there is to take our cash surpluses and deposit it at the corporation for public deposits. In that manner, on average for the last financial year, we got about 1.75% more interest than keeping it in the bank. That boils down to about 1.4 million rand for the year. So what we're trying to do is to put as much money to the Corporation for Public Deposits.
Thank you, Chair, for that. The questions from Member Khaila, long-term sustainability of Eskom at 8%. Chairperson, in our analysis of the decision we made around Eskom, with the information we had, we were able to find that Eskom will be sustainable over the five-year period. Chairperson, we didn't touch the over-recovery under MYPD2. So that it is still has. So if you look at it from that perspective, our own sense is that the entity should be sustainable. We noted the downgrade by the credit rating agencies. However, Chair, they've just downgraded a whole lot of sovereign ratings. A lot of countries have been downgraded. And our own observation as Marisa, because the issue of credit rating always gets raised, we have observed the pattern where once they downgrade RSA, they tend to downgrade the utilities in RSA as well. And it's a question of a time lapse. So our own sense is that, yes, there's a lot to read into the downgrading, but there are lots more other factors other than just the tariff that would influence the downgrading. So we will watch the situation carefully together with the entity. And so we had no way of knowing what would happen under MYPD2, and in the end, the big outcry when Eskom showed a profit of 49 billion.
Yeah.
So our own sense is that let's watch the situation, watch it closely. Our own calculations told us that they are sustainable at 8%. Let's see if anything else comes out.
It's a five-year thing, isn't it?
It's a five-year determination.
And with annual benchmarks where you can sit and assess on an annual basis.
Chairperson, the issue around Medupi was raised, and because the customers end up paying for what it costs to construct, the regulator then does become involved in indirectly. We created a regulatory clearing account when MYPD2 was made, and that was precisely to enable the system to be able to better understand the dynamics of what it means to construct a power station in 2013, or in the 2010s, the last power stations that were done in the country in the 19-something. So, Chair, we have the regulatory clearing account. The regulatory clearing account is meant to deal with clawbacks where the utility behaved in a way or incurred costs in a way that the regulator would view as inefficient. Because in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act, the regulator must allow the utility to recover costs that have been efficiently incurred. And Chair, I'd just like to remind the committee that at the point at which Medupi was being constructed, and particularly the beginning of the construction, the whole world experienced a huge, it wasn't the opposite, it was the other way, where a lot of countries were constructing power stations, and the demand on the features and the installations of power stations, and the prices just shot up the roof. So even in China we saw that, in South America we saw that project costs just ran away with most project managers. We're not saying this because we want to be lenient to Eskom. We will look at their circumstances, and where the costs are not prudently incurred, we will claw back. As a regulator, or efficiently incurred, we will claw back as a regulator. Chair, I think you have dealt with the.
So it has this proactive component, although it's done post, but you're saying to the person that, look, I'm watching you now, you're committing on this. Now you mess it up, don't think you're going to claw back from the consumer, because I'll be there. Never want to remember, I'll be there to protect the consumer now. If you think you're going to mess up things and not do proper project management, shoot up the cost of installation or construction, and think you're just going to do things business as usual. Okay, no. If it's like that, I think, Honourable Member, there's something worth checking, not only within the energy sector, but anyway, in case. Okay, sure.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Chair, the bulletin contract issue, I think you've dealt with it adequately, and unfortunately I can't even deal with the timelines because just as we thought that we're beginning with it, then there was a court case and we had to wait for the court to make a decision. And Chair, we are trying to deal with it as speedily as we can. However, at the moment, we are still just in the preliminary phases of this matter. So we really can't comment either direction. Small-scale embedded generation. Chair, this is an issue that's come onto the table, and we are looking at it as NERSA. Can I just request the committee to give us time? And the next time we come to the committee, we'll deal with it. It has reared its head in a big way. And if you look at how the Energy Regulator Act is written, or Energy Regulation Act is written, it quite never contemplated such development. So in terms of the ERA, everything must be licensed. And yet there's practice out there that's coming up that's saying there's a point at which when you regulate small scale generation, you're actually hobbling the market. You're going to chase investors out of that particular space. However, the way the Act is written, it says that everything comes in. So the department is looking at it. I am aware that one of the amendments on the ERA is to deal with small-scale generation, and this is a recent development, Chairperson. So, yeah, it's a matter that we're also watching, and we'll come back to the committee on it. Time of use metering. As a regulator, we can't particularly look at the technology that the entities utilize, but what we had to deal with around time of use was the issue of shifting the time of use period for different operators to enable them to be able to balance their books. So there's a seasonality issue, winter, summer, spring and autumn, and municipalities are experiencing different things in relation to those. So what we've been doing is working with the different municipalities to shift their time of use in a way that would be meaningful to each municipality. It was very fun. There's one that we dealt with recently where we had to shift their winter peak out of June into the next period, July, August, and September. So we are working with the different municipalities to enable them to use time of use optimally to discourage peak, but to also ensure that they do not lose revenue unnecessarily. Yeah.
Just as clarification, I mean, what I was referring to there is how municipalities can introduce time of use meters at a kind of residential level, and what the plan is there in terms of load shifting.
Chairperson, our information is that particularly the metros are looking at that, but the smaller municipalities we expect will come much later. I think Tshwane, Joburg, and Ekurhuleni and Cape Town have approached us around those particular issues. As part of their tariff application and their cost drivers, but it's at the big municipality level only at the moment. So hopefully, when the experience comes out and the other municipalities see it and costs permitting, they'll be able to move forward as well. Yeah. Chairperson, the issue of the review of KPIs that the member spoke to. One of the things we've discovered is that we run a learning curve around these issues. So in the past, we had articulated KPIs in a manner that made it impossible for us to deliver because it is only the entity that can do that, and yet we had articulated the KPI as a target for ourselves as a regulator. So, for instance, assuring municipal sustainability. It's the entity's responsibility to ensure that. Otherwise, then you say COCTA, National Treasury, make sure that municipalities' financial matters are sustainable. So we had worded it in a way that put a responsibility that NERSA could never execute. That's why we shifted it up. So in relation to municipalities, that was the issue. In relation to the ESCOM ones, it was matters that are covered in the regulatory reporting manuals, but we had then left them as individual items on our APP. So we're cleaning up the APP and rolling issues up and putting them at the correct places. Yes. Thank you, Chair. Harmonization of regulatory policies, the question by Member Mayatula, at the African level. This question I will deal with it also in relation to the RERA question and regional markets. It is the stated intention of SADC to move towards an open electricity market within the region.
And we've had the similar statements being made at an AU level. For markets to integrate, you would need similar policies, which would then be followed by legislation that would enable activity by the different players in that space. So the plan is that at some point we would see similar policies around, for instance, issues of access, issues of buyers and those types of things. At a policy level, they would have to be the same in the different countries in SADC or on the continent, and then the similar laws have to be written so that regulators are able to then regulate appropriately. In fact, the dream is even bigger. In SADC, SADC has indicated that they would like RERA to transform from a voluntary association into a regional regulator so that they can deal with cross-border trade in the same way that the EU deals with cross-border trade issues in the European electricity market. The same is the plan for AFUR, which I think it would be a much longer journey to traverse than the SADC region. However, Chair, in the West of Africa, ECOWAS has moved to a regional regulator, and we're beginning to see some interesting things happening there. The rest of the world is moving towards integrating its markets. Russia has got the Eastern Europe has got a cooperation arrangement with the Western Europe. The Mediterranean region is moving towards creating an integrated energy market. You've got the U.S. and Canada. So and South America, Chair, is moving fast as well towards that. So we are seeing that happening, and we are gearing ourselves up, and we're getting the association to also work with governments to make sure that governments move along as well. So at the appropriate time, we will approach Parliament to assist and advise and to update where the developments are around those issues. Who audits the AG? I'm still young. I still have to work, so I'm not going to answer that.
Are we shy to some profound of courses?
We do find that these things happen in control environments. So even the AG is not perfect. I think this is what this example is saying. And they also go through their own quality assurance review processes so that they can sharpen and refine their own processes. So we are aware, for instance, of NERSA, that the team that audits NERSA from the Auditor General's office was under a QAR. As a result, we found them being very sharp and pursuing every little issues that they discovered. They pursued it to the end. For the first time, we had to argue with them so much. But then we then realized that the fact that they're under QAR meant that they wanted good results when they're being reviewed, and they were therefore going to be very robust in the way that they were dealing with the issues. And control systems in their nature are like that. You will miss things, but if they are good, you will then discover them. Even when you have missed them this year, 5 years down the line, your system must still flag it and say, yeah, you had missed it, they had deal with it. So we will deal with it in that spirit, Chair. The key points for discussion documents. Oh, the Telkom issue, just to complete the story, we have now made an arrangement with Telkom to bill us electronically, and we'll pay on the electronic invoice, and we'll true up when they've done the final bill, so just to avoid it. In fact, it arose 2 financial years ago. The key points for discussion, Chair, it is our documents. We did receive a set of questions from the committee secretary, and we then thought that we'll just prepare responses. And I think from a time management point of view, it's not possible for us to go into these, but these are matters that committee members can follow up with, Chair, with us on them. We just tried to summarize our responses to the key questions that we felt members had raised, and we tried to group them by industry because the questions ran across the different industries. So, Chair, it's really for members' information. They can follow up with us. Otherwise, we can come back at another time and deal with some of the issues that have been raised. The agreements around DRC, Mozambique, and France, and, in fact, the final question, which was, is the mandate of NERSA going to change? Chairperson, I think that's a policy matter, and we would leave it to the policy makers to relook the mandate of NERSA. However, we are satisfied as an organization that the policymaker, particularly the Department of Energy, has showed their hand, that they do intend to expand the scope of the mandate of NERSA. It's a question of time. Chair, to support that. Not only did the Director General mention in this committee that they plan to relook issues around the extent of which NERSA gets involved in the issues of the petroleum regulation. Chair, the Gas Act is in the process of being amended, and in the manner that they've amended the Gas Act, it opens up the areas that the that the regulator will deal with under the Gas under the Gas Act. Chair. So the definition of gas has been expanded, and that would therefore mean the expanded mandate of the regulator. And Chair, we generally tend not to regulate primary energy. We regulate electricity, which is a secondary in this, secondary power. So secondary energy. So we'll never we don't regulate coal. We don't regulate the wind as such, but we regulate the process of converting that into electricity and once it becomes electricity. But the issue of nuclear, Chair, can I just emphasize the fact that the existence of a nuclear regulator is an obligation under the UN. There's no country that particularly has nuclear capability that can never, that can afford not to have a national a safety regulator for nuclear. And those are the checks and balances that have been put in place by the UN, and the country has signed up to it. So we can never have a safety regulator for nuclear being bundled up into another entity. The requirement is that it must stand alone. They would specify the qualifications that they're looking for people to fill that position. So it's just one of those issues, Chair. And as I say, generally, primary energy, except for gas, that does become tertiary energy as well in terms of application. Generally, I'm not sure that the policy department would be looking to get us involved in regulating primary energy as primary energy. Chair. I think the issue of Midupi and prudency audit, Chair, I think I've canvassed that. Chair, I think I've covered all the questions, and I hope Member Kreling raised an issue around RERA, specifically the SEP issue, which I didn't particularly deal with. We have a good working relationship between RERA and SEP, and at the moment, SEP tells us that most of the inter-regional trade that happens is on the basis of bilaterals. So even if we don't have an integrated market, it doesn't mean we can't trade. We'll trade on bilateral contracts, but it is better to have an energy market because that would ultimately benefit the consumers, if people know that they've got competition that only doesn't come from their country but also comes from outside their country. So, you know, we do work with SEP on those issues, and we keep track of the regional projects that have been planned from a generation and transmission point of view.
SEP being?
Apologies, Jeff, the South African Power, Southern African Power Pool, which is the Association of Southern African Utilities, particularly at the system operation level.
Thank you very much. It was quite a mouthful. A couple of additional issues. The other one is that we note with interest the research that you're doing on alternative gas sources, so I hope, one trust and hope you'll share that with us, you know, in future. Just on the end user forum, you only could establish one out of a target of 10. Any comment on that and how you resolve, you're planning to resolve that in future? One other issue you raised was information asymmetry. How do you plan to resolve that? Because it's a matter of interest. Because you, operate in an area where information is very crucial, you know, between yourselves and various stakeholders, you know, whether it's your peers or whether it's your consumers. The other area that is obviously worth noting is your investigations on uncommitted capacity. It's a very helpful exercise, and now my understanding is that you're doing this investigation on piped gas, but the question I'd have, what about piped fuel? Because now we've got two pipes from Joburg to Etegwini. That's all for now.
Thank you, Chair. The research on alternate energy sources, we are happy to share, Chair, with the committee. In fact, we did this further work on it, so when we do come, we'll indicate where all of that went. Chair, the end user forum, we were hobbled by the fact that we had been expecting regulations to be passed under the ERA, Electricity Regulation Act, to strengthen our hand in basically making them license conditions and then going to monitor whether or not the entities have established them. However, the department has indicated that they plan to do it differently, and because the ERA is still under amendment, they are looking at amending that section in the ERA that places the responsibility on them to pass the regulations, Chair. So our own decision was to then drop the project as originally conceptualized, Chair, which was on the back of support by the regulations. We are now going to work with entities to, on a voluntary basis, establish the end user forums until the law is put in place, Chair. So that's just one of those challenges. Information asymmetry is a perennial challenge for all regulators in the world. It can never be eliminated, but you work on reducing it. What we have done as an organization, Chair, is to move towards the regulatory reporting system, which introduced regulatory reporting manuals, which require entities to populate certain fields onto an electronic platform, directly reflecting on our side as a regulator, Chair. We have gone a long way towards implementing that project. We are beginning to see some results around that, because we're now analyzing the information we're getting from the RRM and analyzing information we're getting from applications, and we're using those to check the consistency amongst the entities. However, Chair, I think the challenge around the RRMs is just rolling them out amongst municipalities, so we have decided to go a little slow there. We've started with the metro. And once it's successful, the Chair will then roll it out to the rest of the municipal distributors. But Chair, we are finding the RRMs very, very useful.
RRMs?
Regulatory reporting manuals.
Okay.
So Chair, they are done electronically. And the department will be strengthening our hand, because in the Electricity Regulation Act as well, they're now going to introduce a provision that deals with regulatory accounting and imposing certain specific obligations on licensees around regulatory reporting and accounting, Chair. So we believe that with all of those things, we will minimize the asymmetry, but Chair, we do not believe that we can ultimately eliminate it, which would be the ideal, but even bigger regulators haven't gotten there, Chair. The uncommitted capacity investigation in piped gas, Chair, is something that's happening in piped gas, because that's what the team set for itself as a target. We will seek to harmonize and make sure that the petroleum colleagues do it, Chair. And they have a particular case to do it, because the liquid fuels charter has shown that the transformation of that sector has been very slow. And, Chair, the pipeline is owned by the state-owned entity, which has the muscle to invest, but the bigger issue is the storage capacity. If there's no storage capacity at the end of the pipeline,
there can be entry of HDFAs. So it's a big matter for concern for us, and we will be going to look at the storage capacity above the petroleum companies to make sure that as they claim there isn't spare capacity, we can verify that. But it's not a project that we've set ourselves for in the previous year, and I don't think it's on this year's either, so it will probably be 14-15 Chair. In petroleum, that is, but the gas one is in the current year, Chair.
Well, thank you very much. One thing I've realized that there's such a lot of information that we have to be doing our best to distill and pick up the key issues, particularly for recommendation. And I think in closing, one of the things one would like to check, which I think came out as well, is the ease of concurrency. You're a regulator. You have already started working with the Competition Commission. Maybe as an extension of that position, are you also doing anything with others where you might be, I don't know, trembling on each other's toes or...
If I respond quickly to that, I omitted to mention that we have an MOU with the NNR. Dr. Slaved asked what's our relationship with the NNR. We have an MOU with them, just about one of few, very few entities that we're willing to do MOUs with ourselves, Chair. We have seen issues of concurrent jurisdiction or scope trips, perhaps would be the better way to call it, where the public protector made a decision relating to electricity licensing. And Chair, we are aware that the National Consumer Commissioner as well held a public hearing in relation to the City of Joburg and their tariffs, City Power and its tariffs. So Chair, we are approaching the various entities to see what we can do to make sure that we smoothen the relations, because the laws that give us the various areas of jurisdiction were written at different times, Chair. So it's a function of that, I think, more than anything else. But Chair, we are saying as NERSA that the model we've got with the Competition Commission is possibly a model we'd like to sell to the rest of the regulators, where the Competition Commission has built into its steps a step at which they stop and consult with the National Energy Regulator, and then they then proceed to the next step. And we have, in turn, sorted out our own processes of how to deal with those types of comments that are requested by the Competition Commission from time to time. So we're saying there's a model that we've got that we would want to sell to the rest, but also, Chair, we'll consult with our policymaker as well to deal with those issues of concurrency.
Honourable members, predictability, transparency, independence, and integrity, amongst the cornerstones of NERSA, but obviously with a very strong developmental orientation, that of facilitating and enhancing investment. Because even if ESCOM, as I say, I like ESCOM because they're here, even if they are sitting nicely and honorably in front of an investor, the investor is not looking at ESCOM, he's looking at NERSA and saying, can you give me an assurance that whatever melody this guy is singing, you will ensure that, you know, it's adhered to, if I can use that street language. So to me, that's the way I view, you know, the report of 2012-2013 that NERSA is presenting to us, that they've taken a couple of steps, you know, in advancing that. And, of course, take into account that we also are guided by the new practice of the budget review process. It's six stages. We've tried, you know, to pick up a few things in the past out of the other stages, and we hope we will be improving even in future, because at the end of the day, we've got to do recommendations, which is you'll have to appreciate and bear with us that whilst we have a barrage of questions now, but we'd even set a few ahead, because we would like you to say, but this committee is singing praises for us, but they don't do appropriate recommendations. Because at the end of the day, I mean, the process is known that out of this exercise, we've got to put together, you know,
a set of recommendations. So you do have expectations, if you say that you've done some good work, you know, here and there, that we recommend, you know, where there are lacuna, you know, as the lawyers say, you know, to see how the department can address those. But for now, there's such a lot, honourable members, to say. All one can say, look, we're very grateful for what NESA has done hitherto, and we hope you will still mould and reinforce and enhance your public relations work, because as Funi initially gone in and be known during MIPD processes only, be known regularly, be known in municipalities, not just by the mayors, but by the councillors as well, be known by the ordinary people, and I think you've got a complaints desk or whatever. As to how you mold it and improve it, that's up to you. Maybe you can go to the president's office and see how they have managed the current toll-free number that they set up. But we do expect you to handle that, you know, because the more you create awareness about things, the more these things will come up. As we know, honourable members, although we're focusing on 2012, 2013, if I can share with you, when I attended one of the public consultation sessions of NERSA here in Cape Town, there was a lady who came with a basket. She had everything in it, one-rand rice bucket, one-rand salt bucket, one-rand sugar, and she was saying to NERSA, you tell me, if I am so poor that I have to buy sugar, rice at 1 rand each, that if you're going to increase at this 16%, where am I going to get that money? Yes, it was like that. It was so dramatic, you know. And of course, we've got experts who make their high-level presentations, how it's sounding, but there was someone who was so dramatic in that way. So NERSA is playing that role, and to me, that triggers one thing, that an awareness about NERSA is growing, but we should make sure that NERSA moves it properly. It does not get distorted, so that people know what to complain to you about with this and that. But at this stage in time, hopefully, one is then saying that to me, the work that we have done or not done in 2012, 2013 sets a very good basis for you to improve those areas. You know, whether it's regulation, whether it's revoking licenses, whether it's further research, whether it's engaging with stakeholders, you know, whether it's waiting for a reapplication from ESCOM, which I'm sure we'll be getting in future. But let's hope that NERSA will go from strength to strength. The department is well represented today. Surely, over and above your direct engagement with them, they also are listening attentively of issues raised here, and they will be getting anyway recommendations from us, you know, molded formally in a couple of weeks' time through the Speaker's office, and on that basis, Siyabulela, thank you very much, Paya Dangi. Honourable Mark, thanks very much as well. Tomorrow we'll be dealing with NEXA and NNR, the energy group. And then on Thursday, we'll be rounding up with Sanedi and FFC. Thank you very much for now. The meeting stands adjourned.